Fasita Abad was a third culture kid long before the term hit the mainstream. She's a prolific Filipino artist whose work is currently being shown at the Jameel Art Center in Dubai. Although Akawi and I would have loved to have spoken to her, she passed away unfortunately in 2004, leaving behind over 5,000 works of art that are an archive and a prescient testimony of the Filipino migrant narrative. She is survived by her husband Jack and her nephew Pio, who share space with Akawi and I on this episode. As a Filipino woman, I found this exhibition moved me very deeply. The exhibition is called I Thought the Streets Were Paved with Gold, and that was beautiful and sad to me. This is the first solo exhibition by a Filipino artist in the Gulf. Think about that, what that says about the important work that the Jameel Art Center is doing, but also about the work that we all have to do in the culture and art space. Duquesne has always believed that we were made for each other, to live and grow together. So I guess our work is cut out for us and for you. Akawi and I encourage you to go, to make space and bear witness. See the exhibition with the eyes of your heart and let it transport you to her time. There is no white space here. Thank you for listening. We love you.
Yo, check it out. A whole new generation of young people today who belong nowhere.
But I prefer to be an outcast.
Third culture kids where the concept of the Duquesne is the corner shop or the top shop.
We are live outside. Hey, yo, what's up, people?
What up, nation?
It's a revolution of expression.
Duquesne show, stay tuned in.
Arab digital generation is shaping their identity, their creative expression, and their future. So please give a very warm welcome.
Welcome to your tribe.
So, Pio, this was your first exhibition since 18 months?
Oh, this is the first opening since 18 months. So there've been a few first private view, you know, first. I mean, that's the thing. The art world has kept going. There's been exhibitions, both mine and Pasita's, but there's not really been the opportunity to congregate and celebrate things because of all these ongoing measures, particularly in London. So it's nice to be able to, you know, install a show and then have a community of people to celebrate it.
Absolutely. And, you know, the interesting thing that Akawi was saying, that 2 meter distance for us, so I'm Arab Filipino, so I'm half half. Oh, right. So for Arabs, being 2 meters apart from each other is not normal. Like, we are actually quite communal. So yeah. This is like, this is the apocalypse is next, you know, because we're not used to having, like, you know, this distance between us. But I think Filipino culture is the same. We're actually
wait until we take it for Arabic food.
Oh, have you? Yeah,
this
been?
Is where we hand feed you like the bread. La Allah, open your mouth. Try this. La Allah, Jack, open your mouth.
Akawi will take a piece of bread and he will feed you. Well, pre-COVID. Yeah. Now that's not going to happen. Yeah,
now I'll hand it over to you, but I'll still leave the piece of bread for you. Don't worry.
So I wondered actually, can you let us know about your relationship with Pasita and how this exhibition sort of came about? First Pio, and then Jack, if you don't mind sort of, you know, continuing after, that would be great.
Well, you know, Pasita's my paternal aunt. And I found out yesterday that there is a specific word in Arabic for paternal aunt and maternal. And I thought that's really beautiful that, you know, you really get to place family members in really specific ways. And, you know, I think she was, you know, she was really the reason I became an artist because, you know, from a very young age, if you can see someone, you know, making work in the studio, having exhibitions, you know, it's very much like it becomes a part of growing up. And, it, you know, it's not an imaginary thing. You can see someone, you know, doing it. So she was really important in me deciding to take up this path as well. And, you know, for a long time, I wasn't really involved in the estate and in her work. I think Jack and Jack's wife, Christy, have done an incredible job in keeping, you know, her incredible body of work intact. But in 2017, I was invited by a friend of mine who's the director of the Museum of Contemporary Art and Design in Manila, to co-curate the first sort of major presentation of Pasita's work, I think in over a decade and a half. The curator's name is Marcelina Cruz. And so in April 2018, we opened this exhibition in Manila, which was, this huge show of, I think, over 24 paintings.
Wow.
And which I think for Pasita would be quite a minimal hang, because her, I think the first exhibition she had in Manila in 84, she had like 120 paintings.
That sounds like Dubai. That sounds like something we would do here, like 1,000 paintings.
It's like,
for our
we don't need to
opening.
See empty walls. What is a black wall? There's a Filipino, there's a phrase that is applied by cultural theorists to the Filipino sensibility called horror vacui, which is the fear of empty spaces. And I think Jack and Pasita definitely embrace that sensibility with relish. So going back to my role, so since that exhibition that I co-curated in Manila, I've been more involved in telling Pasita's story and in increasing the scholarship around her work and in collaborating with different institutions to present her work. And this is actually the third in a series of co-curated exhibitions where I work with other institutions to really look at Pasita's work through different global lenses, through different geographic perspectives. So the first was in Manila, the second was in the UK at Spike Island in Bristol, and then this is the third one in Dubai. And because Pasita's life and her practice was so itinerant, it made sense to do these kind of geographically diverse shows. And it's been interesting it's not really a touring show, because the show changes depending on the specificities of the regions and the stories that people can relate to. And because her work is so inclusive and so generous, it's always really beautiful trying to work out how to tell her story.
And Jack, how does this kind of connect to the work that you did with Pasita and do with the work?
Well, that's been the story. I mean, that Pio is trying to tell. I mean, we met in 1974, I guess it was 73, and for the next 32 years, we traveled the world, and she developed as an artist, and big part of that was the travel, and she was inspired by all the places we went, and she would pick up a number of cultural themes, and it just grew. I mean, and she grew as an artist, and it was a wonderful journey, So
it's so wonderful to hear that, because I would like to kind of I was telling Akawi earlier, Batanes, where Pasita is from, and I guess where you are from, Pio. Can you tell our listeners how isolated it is? I think people don't realize how special it is that the work comes from one of the most isolated islands. I tried to go there in 2007, and it was just difficult to get to. So can you let us know about the journey?
You should have tried to get there in the 1950s or 60s. It was impossible. now it's almost like going to Abu Dhabi, but
right.
back then, you basically could only go by barge or especially a military plane.
It was a military stronghold. Like, so there was, because it was it's the most northern island, I believe, of the Philippines. So how did Pasita look out from the island and find her way out to the world? How did she leave?
She followed her ancestors, as Pia will say. Basically, the whole migration into Oceania came down from Taiwan and Batanes out, and so Pasita just followed the natural flow.
But she also, she was born in Batanes, but ended up studying in Manila, when my grandfather became a congressman of Batanes, So that means that you have to go to the seat of power in Manila to hold office. So that's how they ended up from like the most remote. I think to paint people a picture of Batanes as well, it's not a tropical island in any way.
No.
It actually looks more like the Outer Hebrides or Iceland, yes. In fact.
It's quite barren. Yeah.
Yeah, and the weather is closer to Yorkshire than it is to Palawan, right? So it's very rainy. It's very cloudy. It's very cold.
Your socks are always wet. Your socks are never dry. Yeah. Your toes are always cold. Yeah, it's crazy.
Only just. It's actually closer to Taiwan than it is to Manila. And I think like what Jack was saying, you know, it's the recent research has found that it's actually how Austronesian culture spread throughout the world. So, you know, they found like jade jewelry in an archaeological dig in Batanes, and the forms of these jade pieces were the same forms as Maori wood carving in Aotearoa. So it's interesting.
It's like a tapestry, very very reflective of her work, isn't it?
It is interesting to think about, you know, these migration of forms and these kind of, I guess, mutations of motifs and how actually that's embedded within Pasita, you know, the 4,000 years of migration from Batanes to, I don't know, Latin America, Polynesia, is actually ingrained within the DNA of her and her work.
No, it's really beautiful. I was there yesterday, and I took the tour. And just going back to what you mentioned about that there is no space left untouched in her work or her life. When you go to the exhibition, there's a picture of their bedroom, and it's all colors. There's literally not even one space of empty or there's not the color white does not exist in this bedroom. Or I don't know if it was your living room, Jack. Please feel free to correct me. But it's such, like, I can just imagine waking up and just seeing this mixture of color throughout the walls, throughout her art, throughout everything. And Jack, yesterday I overheard that throughout the 25 years you were preserving her work, and there are around 5,000 pieces, if I'm not wrong. Is it?
Yeah, and she did over 5,000 pieces of work. And we probably have, I don't know, 2,500 or whatever. And so my wife and I, that was one of the first things to make sure we preserve them well. And they're all carefully packed and packaged in warehouses. And then we put a number on loan. We had 100 on loan. We have 100 on loan to the Singapore Management University. And we had another 100 on loan to the World Bank for maybe 10, 15 years. So at least we wanted to get it out, but we've tried to preserve the bigger pieces, because we knew we'd want to have an exhibitions at one point. And the bigger pieces, you know, once they're sold, you don't get them back. So
yeah,
that's very important to tell the story. So,
question. So as you mentioned, you guys have over 2,500 minutes throughout the world. Pio, you mentioned that every time in previous exhibitions or previous openings, you curate the pieces that you bring with you to the city or to the country that you're coming from. What was the thinking process behind when you were coming to Dubai, the selection of it? Because I went, the exhibition is a journey. And then when you get to that last room where there's pieces that showcase her travel throughout the States and Congolese and the Congo, like, what was like the criteria or like the thinking process behind selection for this exhibition?
Well, you know, we knew that, for instance, the second room of the show is from a series that she made called The Immigrant Experience, which was produced when Jack and Pasita were living in Washington, D.C. in 93, in the early late 80s to early 90s. And she was grappling with what it meant to be a woman of color living in D.C. at a time when, you know, the society was becoming increasingly multi-ethnic, but also there was this kind of, you know, there's always this friction, you know, the the kind of distrust of immigrants and the plight of immigrants is always, you know, there's always kind of less than savory narratives that you have to contend with. And so she, the immigrant experience works was always going to be at the center of the exhibition because you know, it's a story of Hong Kong. It's a story of Dubai. It's a story that resonates with so many different people. And I think one thing that is also important to mention is while this is Pasita's first exhibition in the Middle East, but more importantly than that, this is the first exhibition devoted to this is the first museum exhibition devoted to a single Filipino artist in the Gulf, which is mind-blowing when you think that 20% of people in Dubai are Filipinos. So we really wanted that was the start of my conversation with Nora Razian and Nadine O'Curry, who I co-curated the exhibition with, you know, we want to invite people to the gallery so they can see their stories reflected on the museum walls. But then, you know, alongside that, we started looking at her other works. So there's one painting in the first room called African Mephisto, which is actually the first trapunto that she'd ever made. And, you know, as Jack was saying, like so many of these paintings are in storage. Like when I arrived here last week, that was the first time I'd ever seen this painting in real life. So it was amazing to be able to see the work. But there's also a series of paintings based on a trip she did in Yemen in the late 90s. So there's a kind of, we wanted the works to reflect, you know, conversations surrounding the, not just the Filipino diaspora, but the diasporic culture in general that that defines Dubai. But then there are also these works that she made when she was, you know, thinking about this region and how she synthesized, you know, motifs from Yemeni door patterns into these incredible paintings.
Yeah, I mean, actually, you know, people don't realize it, but she spent a lot of time in the region. The painting that Pia was mentioning, African Mephisto, was actually inspired from her work in Sudan, whereas the bottom part was based on Sudanese basket covers that we picked up in Omdurman and had in the house for many, and the pattern, the shape, and the face was inspired initially by a German movie about an actor who sympathized with the Nazis, but actually she made it into a African face, much like the tribes in the Nuba and the Khao in Sudan, because they paint when they have the wrestling matches, they paint their faces white with ash, and so that was the inspiration there. But you know, she traveled and worked in Egypt, in Sudan, in Iran, Turkey, Jordan, Oman, UAE, and Yemen. And actually, you know, I mentioned that it came to Dubai in 89, and Pasita was with me. And yeah, at that point, we met up with some Filipinos, and And as Filipinos do, they invite you back for dinner and you know, come on over. And then they have some friends over. And it was at that time she heard the stories of, you know, the trials and tribulations of many of the contract workers have. You know, it's not as bad now, as it, but it was very unregulated at those times. And a lot of time the agents would cheat the workers, wouldn't pay half their fees. Some people got mistreated. And that was the inspiration for a painting she did, which called The Torments of the Philippine Overseas Worker. And as Pio said, you know, this immigrant experience, it basically is something that built up over many years, because when she came to the States in 1970, you know, it was the first time out of the Philippines. And in the Philippines, she didn't know anybody who wasn't Catholic. She didn't know, you know, there was no diversity. And she arrives in San Francisco and like, whoa, you know, They're African Americans, they're Jewish, they're gays, they're you name it, they're Mexicans, and you know, she embraced this world. She really, you know, was invigorated by it, but everybody had a story. And you know, one of the first things I remember, we were meeting with some friends, and I asked about, you know, what's your immigrant status or something, and then Pasita said, "Never, never, never ask an immigrant that question, because you don't know." And one of her cousins was kind of a playboy in San Francisco, and he had a couple of girlfriends. And one girlfriend got mad at him, and she reported him to the immigration, and he was on a plane back to the Philippines
three
days later.
Him.
Yeah. And she came across that story. There's one of the paintings here. It actually was purchased by Jamil from Dorowat, and about an African woman in Washington. And she had the same experience. You know, she dumped a boyfriend, and a boyfriend said, "Okay, so I'm going to give it to you." And she called immigration, and now she's back in Guinea, and never been able to come back to the States.
Never been able to come back. Wow, I find it quite remarkable that what you and Pasita were experiencing in your daily lives has now become the overarching sort of experience for. You're going to be hard pressed to find a Filipino who doesn't have the narrative of the immigrant experience built into their DNA. It's part of the question of our identity, you know? And I just find her work so prolific because I don't know. Do you think that she knew how impactful it was going to be when she was creating the work, or was she just reflecting the world around her?
Well, she wanted to tell a story. It was catalyzed by the fact she was invited to an exhibition and there were a lot of Asian Americans and others from Latin America and talking about diversity. And she, I remember her coming back and saying, you know, I've got to do something because I've got a lot to say about this issue. I can say a lot more than these people have been talking about. I want to tell that story. And it was interesting because in this series, they were all people that she knew or that she had met. And, you know, for example, she did one on mixed marriage. And we had, you know, a number of friends who had mixed marriages. And she chose a Canadian and a Sri Lankan. And you know, this Canadian, you know, small family with, you know, two boys and married to a Sri Lankan. And they have about eight kids. And they had a wedding in a temple in southern India. And it was like, whoa, this whole mind-blowing experience. And the same thing she did, there was, you know, this painting you have to blend in before you stand out.
Assimilation is critical. Yeah, you take off the fresh off the boat feeling, which is, we say fob, it's a negative word, but you know, it is a word that we use and we say, you want to assimilate, you want to blend as much as possible. And then when you do that, you inevitably hit the identity crisis, which all me and my friends are going through, which is, who are we as Filipinos? Like, where do we belong? You know? And that's what this entire podcast has been about.
Yeah. We become really good at code switching, I think. And I think that, you know, you have to blend in before you stand out precedes the term code switching by a good 30 years. And I think that's
absolutely
what's so amazing. That's what's so amazing about the work. It feels incredibly contemporary. And it's whether, you know, it's a question of whether, you know, has the world changed that much or has it just kind of gone back around? We don't know.
I think we've coded it better. I think we have. I think I can express my mother's journey, you know, going to the Middle East and then Canada in a better way than, you know, she could find the words for it. But in her actions and her practice and her fashion and her friends, you'll find the same questions that I have, because she was part of the first wave of OFW, of overseas foreign workers. And I would imagine Pasita as well saw that wave. That's the wave that took us away from the island towards the cosmopolitan. I have a question about representation, because as a Filipino in the media, and I don't often say I'm Filipino, because there aren't, first of all, I'm never asked. This is one of the few moments where suddenly it's like super relevant. But also because I don't know why I do this. Everybody's cool with me being Filipino. It's just easy. It's easy to just, it's a very, it's a culture that sort of gets accepted in so many places. Pio, what is your thought on representation, and why is it important that Pesita's work is the first in the Gulf? And it's remarkable to me that of all, there's been so many artists that have come through since the 1930s, but she's the first. Yes. Why does that matter?
I think it means so much to have your experiences reflected within institutions that, you know, that might seem so distant or might seem to be catering to other narratives. To embrace, you know, I think Pasita's work is so inclusive. It's very specifically made by Filipino artists, but it's also universal in how it, you know, like Jack was saying, you know, every single person depicted in the immigrant experience works, they're not archetypes. They're real people that she encountered, you know, when she was living in DC. And also what's incredible about her work is, you know, and usually, I mean, I don't want to generalize too much, but when artists depict, you know, people of color, it usually speaks about one culture. It speaks about one experience, the experience of one community. But actually in Pasita's, there was a really beautiful a quote that I got from a curator when I was talking to him about Pasita's work. But, you know, he was saying Pasita's work is like this incredible archive of like the Latin American, the African, the Middle Eastern, and the Asian experience in one incredibly exuberant surface. And that's really how we experience life, right? It's not monocultural. It's like, you know, everything is a fusion of something. And her work is, you know, distinct, is, you know, she very much identified as a Filipino, but it was always a Filipino, but she always saw her place in the world through the lives of other people and other communities. And I think that's why it's important that it's her that is the first Filipino artist showing here, because it's an understanding of her place in the world as a Filipino, but also it's an understanding of a more complex relationship with you know, this global society.
Absolutely. And no, thank you for
100%, that. 100%. It's really important. As someone that has lived here all his life, hung out, raised with Filipinos, played basketball, it's an honor to have such beautiful work from her side, and it's being the first time in the region, to be really honest.
And absolutely. Last night at the exhibition, I was introduced to a man who was from Sudan, South Sudan, and I mentioned that Pasita painted there, and I said, where were you in South Sudan? He said, I'm from Wau. I said, that's where Pasita was. I said, come over here. I'll show you the painting that she did of the market in Wau. And she had cut it up and incorporated into another painting, and he was saying, wow, look at this. And but, you know, and it was incorporated with a figure from Cambodia. And then also another figure from Philippines. So she had this, you know, unique ability to pull different cultural threads together and mix them, and even, you know, she would take things like cowrie shells that were from Africa, or from Papua New Guinea, and then she'd incorporate it in Indian paintings. And take Indian mirrors and put them in Papua New Guinea. And so it was, and it worked. And she made it work.
Well, she sounds like the internet. She sounds like she got the internet. She understood it. So one of the things I wanted to ask, and this is for both of you, actually, our friends who are artists always are curious about the artist process. So, you know, the process by which she created her art, because, you know, some people just kind of make a piece make pieces in fast motion, and others sort of take their time. Was she someone that worked like in with hyper focus? Was she multi fascinated in her approach. How did she approach creating and eventually kind of getting to you mentioned 5,000 pieces of, you know, work. How did she do that over her lifetime?
Obviously, with over 5,000 pieces, she didn't work slowly.
No. She
multitasked. She'd be working on three or four paintings at one time. You mentioned earlier about no white space. She hated white. She couldn't. Mm-hmm. One time she saw a woman with a white dress, and she walked up to her and said, "It's a nice dress. I'd love to paint it." And the woman was shocked to say that. That's an expensive dress. But so what she would do is she would put three or four canvases on the wall. She'd staple them on the wall. And while she's working on one, she'd take the extra paint and then just push it onto the other canvases. So she never had to face a white canvas. She hated facing a blank canvas. She wanted something that, and then she'd just take it from there. What do I see? What do I feel? And the other thing that was very important was music. She always had blasting music in her studio, and she'd be dancing around and playing and painting, and music was very important to her process.
She introduced me to the wonder that is Tina Turner. She was
the
a
legend,
big Tina
the
Turner
legs.
Fan. The legend, the legs.
And so dance and music and everything was, I guess, equally a part of the creative process.
But I think what gets lost, and I think this is when I started curating the shows, one thing that, you know, I felt was important was that the paintings shouldn't be hanging on walls, that they should be kind of almost in the center of the room so you can walk around it. Because, you know, in many ways, a pasita about Trapunto is two works. The front is this kind of, you know, painted, quilted, embellished painting. And then the back is like this incredible, intricate stitchwork. It's like drawing with thread. And it also shows the two different, aspects involved in creating the work. You know, there's the kind of more intuitive, free aspect of painting, but then the level of like dedication and rigor involved in doing the stitching is another aspect of the practice. So it actually, it's so engaged with the process of making that you really, like, I loved, one of my favorite things is watching people look at the work, because they kind of sit in front of it and they look at it like a film. You know, they stay there and they kind of travel through the surfaces because there's so much to see.
She had so much to say, it sounds like.
No, the show in Manila was based on one of the titles. Actually, the past three shows are all based on the titles of her works, which are always really incredible. But the show, when we curated the show in Manila, it was immediately clear what the title should be. And it's from a painting she made towards the end of her life. And it was called "I Have a Million Things to Say."
She does.
And she definitely had a million things to say.
A billion things to say. And actually, I would just like to make sure we get all the information for the listeners. Can you tell us about the exhibition that's happening now at the Jameel Art Center? And let our listeners know how they can... how long it's going for. Give us all the details so that, you know, they can come and experience her wonderful work.
So the exhibition at Jameel Art Center is called Pasita Abad. I Thought the Streets Were Paved with Gold. And it opened yesterday, and it runs until, I think, the 14th of February. So it has a, you know, it's on for a few months. And, you know, I really invite everyone to see it. And to, you know, I think if... even for people who normally don't go to galleries or museums, it's really a show that invites everyone to have a look and to really invest time in looking at these paintings.
No, 100%. Like, I'm not like, I'm exactly the target audience you just mentioned. Like, I don't always go to exhibitions. I usually go with anyone who tells me I really need to see things. But really, for everyone that's listening, like, go and dedicate two to 3 hours, because every single piece the has a journey around it, and because of how many cultures there is in one piece, I just stood there for like a good 25 minutes and I was just watching and trying to understand what every single piece of it, every single angle, every single corner meant. And it was truly inspiring. It was really a journey. And you know, you guys can go alone, even if you don't have anyone to come with, just go. And just, I went and I just stood there piece by piece and I just watched. And then I started reading on the walls what everything meant. But I like, it's just being there and consuming it and like trying to understand. And the colors in the room and the room itself, it's different. It's different, to be honest. And it's really a 2 to 3 hour inspirational session for everyone that needs it.
Thank you. Thank you so much. This has been such for me, as I feel I have to say it. I'm like a Filipino woman of color trying to navigate who we are in the world. And finally, you know, I've been here for 14 years. Suddenly something's come up that spoke directly to me. And to think that she made it decades ago, maybe, you know, is remarkable, because that's the gift of our ancestry. And that's the gift of our culture. And that's something that I can't wait to go. I'll be going tomorrow or the day after. And Jack and Pio, is there anything else that you'd like the listeners to know as, like, you know, before we sort of sign off and get into the exhibition?
No, I think just come to see the show. I think it's we're really honored to be able to bring this work to Dubai, and really it's for everyone.
Yeah, it's the Pasita Abad experience. It's overwhelming.
No, the experience is the right word. Experience is the right word. Seriously, Jack, thank you for preserving her work. Pio, thank you for spreading the message, the work, all around the world. Thank you. Like I said, the gallery is amazing. You guys and the Jameel Arts Center team did an amazing job curating, and the way each room has been is shaped, and the pieces, it's truly, to what you said, Jack, and an experience that... It's sad that we only have it till February, but it is an experience.
We should have it forever. Honest. We should have it forever. The first Filipino exhibition in the Gulf at Jameel Arts Center. Please, please, please go see it.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you very
thank
much.
You, thank you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for kicking it with us today. I hope you enjoyed listening to this week's episode as much as we enjoyed creating it for you. Please subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcast at to stay up to date with all our conversations. Also, if you don't mind, hit us with the 5-star rating, leave a comment, let us know how you feel about the show. That way, it could also help others find the show. And be sure to share it with your friends and family, whoever you think can benefit from it. You can holler at us on all social media platforms at The Can Show. We'd love to hear from you. Or you could drop us an email to hello@thecanmedia.com. Salam.